Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I am your host, James Coker, along with Luke Francis of the Racing Pilot fame. Today, we are going to be reviewing the Formula One MSC Cruises United States Grand Prix 2025, also giving a preview for the upcoming Grand Prix in Mexico City. But before we do that, Luke, you and I were both in Austin at COTA the entire weekend. Let's talk about it a bit.
Yeah, definitely. My second time in COTA, and I thought it maybe couldn't be better than last year. Because last year was sort of, yeah, probably the best F1 experience I've ever had. And it trumped it again. I think it's something about the city. It just gets better and better the more you go. And I love barbecue so much. So I was happy. I ate way too much brisket. I'm feeling it now, but it's all worth it.
Yeah, which brisket spots did you hit up?
So we did Terry Black's.
I did Terry Black's as well, which was great.
Of course. It's the classic. And then I found, to be honest, the way it works, at least around the F1 events, whether it's events in the evening with a brand or at track, everything has brisket in it, whether it's brisket sandwiches, brisket, you know, with mac and cheese and coleslaw, whatever it is, it's everywhere. So I had a lot of impromptu brisket from various different places as well. And then on the drive, because we flew out of Houston, actually, we drove about 3 hours from Austin to Houston and stopped about 2 hours in at the most like classic US roadside barbecue place and had a whole nother sitting, which I really didn't need.
Was it Rudy's that was in a gas station?
Oh, you're testing me now. No, it was, I'm going to have to remember the name.
There's also Salt Lake, which like is outside of Austin. Okay, got it.
Right. It was called World Famous something, which I'm sure quite a lot are, but yeah. It was so good.
That's amazing. Yeah. I grew up in, as you know, I grew up in Texas. I grew up in Dallas. My wife went to grad school in Austin at UT. So I spent a decent amount of time there, but that was like 15 years ago. I have not been back to Austin in a while. It's a much different city now. It still like has a little bit of the flavor that I remember. It's still weird. Still has like a little bit of the soul that I remember that made Austin so special and distinct, but had a great time there, ate great food. I absolutely loved COTA. It was my first time there. And I get the appeal as a viewer at home, getting the opportunity to watch street races and have street circuits and sort of varying it up on the calendar. But there's something so incredibly special about getting to go to a purpose-built track that is built with the fan experience in mind. And I think that is what's so special about the Circuit of the Americas. You and I were just talking before we got on here about how even just having a GA ticket, you have so many different options of how to experience the race weekend.
Yeah, definitely. I think the way they've built it, as you said, purpose-built track for F1, when you're GA, you have so many different vantage points because of the undulation of the track. I mean, I know in MotoGP they call it the roller coaster because it just is crazy undulations all around the circuit. And so to find those GA spots, there's loads of places you can watch with just a general access ticket. And the thing that I thought was awesome is, you know, Silverstone is my home track. I'm always quite disappointed by the GA because it's firstly really flat. It's an airfield, so you can't see anything. And then the food selection is pretty basic. It's, you know, pizza, fried chicken, burgers. Whereas in Austin, in Kota, it was brisket, hot dogs. They had pretzel stands. And then they had in all the tents, they had live music. You got a real taste of the local culture through the GA access, which I've not seen in any other races I've been to that level.
Yeah, I talked to a lot of people who are attending this weekend via GA, and everybody's still, like, even though it's general admission, and often at some races it's not the best experience, everyone had a great time. I would say if I went back and I had a GA ticket, and we talked about this a little earlier, I would get there early in the day, I would bring a chair, I would bring an umbrella, and I would climb up that hill on turn one and just post up there all day with a group of people. Like, that view at turn one is unbelievable.
No, it's incredible. And I see it similar to the Hungara Ring in terms of the views you get. I was there last year or the year before when Piastri won his first race, and you're able to sit at the top of this massive hill and essentially see the whole of the first and last sectors. All in one view. It was considerably more unbearable in Hungary with the heat. However, it was about 36 degrees Celsius in Hungary. Wow. No shade. So that was the only negative. But with Kota, they had, you know, big tents you could go in when there wasn't any racing on. But as I said, loads of space to sit and watch. So yeah, I'm a big fan of the track. But the only thing, and we did see some great racing this weekend, but the only thing is it doesn't conjure up kind of, you know, amazing races every year. You can imagine like an Interlagos, they're always a brilliant race, Silverstone, but Kota for some reason just doesn't quite deliver that on-track action. Of course, we saw some this weekend, but maybe not because of the track.
Yeah, I think like more than anything, we saw a lot of action lap one, turn one in both races, and that kind of decided the result at the end of both the sprint and the Grand Prix. But I agree with you. Like, I feel like Kota is kind of in the middle where it's like not quite Monaco where there's no opportunity for overtake, but it's also not a track where you're going to see a ton of overtakes at the same time. So it's like somewhere in between. And, you know, I hope if they can gradually make the cars smaller, maybe Kota can become one of those tracks where there's more on-track action, or they solve the issue with the turbulent, dirty air and not being able to gain speed and get into a proper slipstream when you're behind a car. So I'm not really sure what the solution is there, but the fan experience is amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I think one thing that possibly would change, I mean, that, as we know, there's various elements that go into good racing. But I know at Kota, the track surface is particularly harsh. Yeah. So we saw in the Grand Prix, at least in the first stint, the drivers just needed to manage their tires. And you weren't seeing a lot of wheel-to-wheel racing in that first stint. You saw Max take off and basically just make sure he had a one-second lead or plus, you know, just staying out of DRS purely because it can be pretty tough on tires. So don't know if a resurfacing would maybe change things, mean drivers can push their tires a bit more, be a bit more racy. But yeah, I think we've seen as well during the weekend, the contract's been extended. So there's a lot more time for maybe changes to be made at Kota to make it more of a spectacle to watch. But I'm sure, as we'll get into very soon, we certainly had some great drama this weekend and a very exciting championship fight by the end of it.
Yeah. Before we get into the race, what was the highlight of your weekend?
So I managed to nab a paddock pass last minute on Thursday evening at about 11:30. I got a paddock pass for Friday, which is just classic Formula One, right? I mean, anticipating the race for months, and then it comes that late. I wasn't intending to get one. It just one popped up, and I took the opportunity. So I spent all of Friday in the paddock.
Amazing.
Chatted to a few guys. Spoke with Romain Grosjean briefly, actually.
Cool.
Asked him about his recent test in the F1 car. So that was easily my highlight. But how about you?
And I think he might be going back to IndyCar with Dale Coyne Racing this upcoming season. I don't know if it's officially been announced, but I think those are the rumors.
Possibly. I'm sure.
Dude, I had too many amazing things happen to just pick one, but I got to do a hot lap with Isaac Hadjar in a Ford. I was there. First of all, I was there with Ford Racing. Shout out to everybody at Ford Racing for being incredible hosts and Ignition Collective, which was the agency that, you know, planned out the activation. But I got to do a hot lap, a Pirelli hot lap with Isaac Hadjar and a Mustang Dark Horse. I got to make a video with Yuki Tsunoda, which I put out today. I got to make a video with Isaac Hadjar and Liam Lawson. I got to meet Daniel Ricciardo and drop by the Ashante pop-up shop before they opened. And he gave us like 30 minutes of his time and made an effort to like talk and connect with each of us, which was amazing. I got to go on a Ford Bronco off-roading experience, which was wild. And we tackled like rock faces at like 30 degrees, which I thought I was going to tip over, but that was amazing. I got to be on the ESPN pre-race show on streaming, which was amazing. So shout out to Liz Loza for making that happen. And just being there and getting to run into like so many people that I know online who are either like creators, followers, fans, or people who work in the space, either for teams or for brands. Like I felt like every few minutes I was running into somebody that I knew. And I think that's what I love about being involved with Formula One more than anything, is like getting to connect with so many people. Like, as you know, like I'm older, I'm 41, I'm married, I have a kid. I don't have much of a social life anymore. So when I get an opportunity to attend a race and like connect with a lot of people that also have the same like love for F1 and motorsport that I do, it's energizing.
No, definitely. And I think the size of Austin as well just lends to that community. You know, I was walking around on, it would have been Thursday, I think. I went to Alan's Boots to get a new belt.
Yep.
And I got a scooter literally for 5 minutes, and I saw Charles Leclerc's girlfriend. I saw a couple of clients I've worked with at agencies or at teams walking around. You know, it's just this like turns into this amazing community of Formula One people over a race weekend. And then, you know, once you find yourself in the paddock, you know, you were saying about bumping into these people, you know, I'm speaking on email with all these people. I never actually see them. I never meet them. And so being in the paddock is so special because I actually get to chat with these guys in real life and build that deeper connection, which I don't think you really get at most races other than COTA. I think it's one that everyone is dying to go to. And so there's good turnout.
For sure. I also was very fun on Sunday night after the race. I was having drinks with a friend on a rooftop bar, and we looked down, and at an intersection, Liam Lawson was on a scooter wearing a cowboy hat with like a couple of his friends, and they were just like, they were like waiting for the light to change green, but they were just like being kids, like scooting around the city, like having a good time.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so good.
Super fun. Should we get into the sprint?
Let's do it. So
let's do it. Let's talk sprint quality first.
So sprint quali, fairly standard stuff. I know we both went into this race saying Max would probably be the dominant force this weekend. I think we both felt, I mean, I know you predicted somewhat correctly, actually.
That's wild. I predicted that Lando and Oscar were going to take each other out in turn one, and that did not happen in the Grand Prix, but it did happen in the sprint.
Yes. Yeah. And so, yes, we had Max starting in P1, and then the McLarens behind Max from the grid. And so I'm sure, as many of you saw, they sailed up into turn one, Max had a brilliant start, got away and managed to sort of stay safe in turn one, but it couldn't be said for the McLarens. Hülkenberg, who qualified amazingly in fourth place for the sprint quali. Basically, it's unfortunate. I've heard many different views on it. I think it's a racing incident, essentially, because you have so many cars involved. But what it looked like was three into one corner. Lando took the wider line into turn one. Oscar basically tried to switch back and go down the inside and then met a, turning Nico Hülkenberg, collided. Piastri then concertinaed into Norris, spun Norris out, resulting in a triple DNF of both McLarens. Fernando Alonso, who actually clipped Hülkenberg in the first place. So this is what I mean. So much going on. Yeah. I think it's impossible to impart blame on someone when there's just that much chaos.
Agreed.
Hülkenberg did continue, but his opportunity for some good points sadly went away in that first corner. But what are your opinions on that first corner collision?
Well, I will say I agree with you that I think it was a racing incident. You know, I think, some people were blaming Nico. Some people were blaming Oscar for the switchback. But ultimately, I think it was four racers who were just like focused on their race, kind of had tunnel vision, thought they saw gaps. And like you said, concertina effect, one thing leads to another. Or if you're Lance Stroll, I don't know if you ever remember this interview. Lance Stroll once referred to the concertina effect as the Constantina effect.
Well, there was arguably his own little Constantina effect later in the sprint as well, which I'm sure we'll get onto. But I think for that collision, obviously the lucky party in this, or not lucky, but the fortunate, beneficiary of this is Max Verstappen gaining 8 points over both McLarens in the championship fight, something that I'm sure we didn't see coming and he didn't see coming. I think as well, Lando probably would have seen it as a missed opportunity in terms of clawing back those points.
Yeah.
It is only a few points, literally essentially 1 point between each position for sprint. So it's not going to swing a full sort of championship lead, but it's, every little helps when it's championship fight that's this close.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd put on my tinfoil hat, like I know you like to do, James.
Sure.
And I'm thinking here, in reflection, there are many reasons this makes no sense, but what do you think about Oscar Piastri purposefully switching back, knowing he would get hit by Hülkenberg and then take out Lando to prevent Lando from outscoring him in points-wise?
I don't think he was thinking that. I think he was just trying to win the race.
I fully agree, but yeah, I'm just being...
Were there talks online of him doing that?
No, I just had this weird thought. I don't know. And then I realized quite soon after that Piastri was certainly in the fight anyway to go past Lando.
I think I think these drivers don't really overthink that stuff. I think maybe teams sometimes overthink that stuff and maybe try to, as we all know about Crashgate way back in the day. But I think drivers are always trying to win or finish in high amount of finishing position as possible. I think it's very rare, unless you have a temper like back in the day with Dan Ticktum or like Santino Ferrucci or whatever. Like, I think it's very rare for someone in an open wheel car to try to purposely crash into somebody.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I guess it did happen last year with Max when he got upset with the penalty that he was going to get and he went into George Russell. So I guess it can happen, but that was more him letting his emotion get the best of him. That wasn't like a concerted effort to deny somebody points.
Yeah, I think with this, if my conspiracy is true, then Oscar is a seriously impressive quick thinker.
Yeah,
To be able to be in that position, going into turn one, switching back consciously to go, I'll just make sure I get hit.
Yeah.
I think he's not human. He's an incredible racing driver, but I don't think he's that superhuman. I don't think anyone is. But it's always funny to talk.
Can we also talk about Yuki Tsunoda's race start in the sprint?
Oh, it's chaos, but brilliant.
It was brilliant. He essentially takes the line that I always take in the F1 video game when I have no damage on.
Literally, he just sailed straight in and then made the most of all that chaos and cut through. However, he did pick up, while that was a brilliant start, and he basically, you know, cut through the whole field, he did basically pick up Nico Hülkenberg's full front wing and dragged it down for about maybe four or five corners, eventually got rid of it.
Yeah.
And Hülkenberg actually ran over his own front wing. I don't know if you saw that.
No.
Because Yuki picked it up at turn one, delivered it, and plopped it just over the crest of, I want to say, after the S's. And then Hülkenberg, stumbling back without his front wing, can't see it because it's over the crest of the hill, and runs over his own front wing again.
Man.
Tough race for him. But yeah, pretty awesome start for Yuki. There was also, I think, Leclerc, his onboard. Leclerc or Hamilton, one of the Ferraris, again, kind of dodging these cars flying around in turn one. It was quite something.
Yeah, and a very impressive sprint race for Yuki. You know, he qualified P18 to no fault of his own. Laurent Mikas did admit that it was team management was at fault for him exiting out of Q1 in the sprint quali. It was not Yuki's fault. They just timed it poorly. So, like, it was unfortunate that he was starting at the back, but to start P18 and finish P7, super impressive, and he must have been really happy with that result.
Yeah, definitely. I know we've spoken about the pressure on him with Hadjar and Lawson, that sort of three-way fight for those seats. So, yeah, brilliant result for him in the sprint. Also, I think, shout out to Williams. Sainz back on the podium after his podium in Baku. Albon P6, double points in a sprint, I think is an impressive feat for any team.
Agreed.
And so, very, very impressive for them. Sadly, fell apart quite badly as the race weekend went on. But, I mean, points are points, especially if you're Williams.
Still, I mean, Williams to get both a Grand Prix and a sprint podium this season is, you know, the rest of the season is just gravy at this point. Like, I'm sure they, you know, want to finish ahead of the rest of the midfield in the constructors and try to finish fifth, but having two podiums, nobody predicted that. Nobody expected that.
No, especially given the fact, I think after Sainz's podium, that Williams scored more points just this season than they had since, I want to say, 2018 or 2017. So James Vowles is doing amazing things, as we all know. There he is, a top operator, so great to see them performing again.
You want to talk briefly about the Lance Stroll and Esteban Ocon crash?
So another turn one incident, not quite the same as the McLarens. I think this was a very opportunistic move from Stroll. Essentially, he was chasing down Esteban Ocon and was, I want to say, three or four car lengths behind going into turn one. Again, he did a move that you said you would do without any damage control into turn one. But Lance went in with way too much speed, locked up, and basically hit Ocon with so much speed that Lance's whole front suspension completely blew out. So it was a tough one for Stroll, and I think, you know, I don't like to talk down on drivers too much, but all I find with this situation is there are so many talented drivers in the world of motorsport that are missing out because he has the privilege to have that seat every season. So I know it's the same discussion again and again, but it was just another case of what could have been if another driver was in that seat alongside Alonso.
Some people use the term seat blocker.
I can see that.
I would say, like, he's probably, you know, a lot of people consider him that at this point. You know, he's shown times where he's shown he's like a very competent, accomplished driver, but I think anybody else in his situation probably would not have stayed in F1 past one or two seasons.
Yeah, I find with him, I mean, you naturally wouldn't be motivated. You know, you're not fighting for your seat. It's always safe. So
yeah,
if he was winning races, getting podiums something's not right in his head. If he, you know, his motivation is the issue here. If he's just always given an easy race seat, whereas other drivers, you know, the likes of Hadjar and as we're seeing with Lawson and Yuki, they are fighting for their future in the sport.
Yeah,
and so you're seeing great performances. You're seeing errors. Obviously, Hadjar, I know we'll get onto it, but Hadjar in quali, for example, pushing it to the limits because you know he has to. Whereas you've got Stroll that strolls along and doesn't really risk much.
Do you think Isaac Hadjar is driving for his future? I don't think he is. I think he's like, I think they're just deciding whether they're going to keep him at Racing Bulls or promote him to Red Bull.
Well, I think that's maybe part of it. You know, got I it. Think he's in a situation where he's certainly the front runner, as I know yes. we've discussed, out of those three. But a lot can change. You know, if he mm-hmm. has a string of three bad races, Lawson gets 3 points finishes, recency bias kicks in, and suddenly all those results previously this season maybe get not forgotten, but considered a bit less than if there was a recent points haul from Lawson. So, yeah, he's definitely in a safer position, but you can tell by his frustration when he crashed out in Q1. Yeah, he was not happy at all, and he knew that he threw away an opportunity to prove that he is dead set for that Red Bull seat, whereas now it's, you know, he didn't have the opportunity to show that, so it's a question mark.
I would keep, if I were, I'm not that I know anything about motorsport besides like the fan perspective, but if I was Red Bull and Racing Bulls right now, I would keep the driver lineups as is with the condition that whoever is in that second Red Bull, let's say like we keep Yuki there, he's on notice and has to keep his performance up, and if he doesn't, he can either be switched or be dropped.
Yeah, I want to see a very active, what Alpine started doing this season of three race contracts.
Yeah.
I want to see Red Bull go, Yuki has the first three, Hadjar has the next three.
Oh, interesting.
Lawson has the next three.
I like that.
Because, I mean, I guess it would be ruining three drivers' careers at once instead of one, which they have a tendency to do, but I think, from an entertainment value, it'd be good.
Sure. I think the problem with that is I believe a team can only use four drivers on their team over the course of the season.
Is that so?
So I do think you could like swap back.
Yeah.
Like they were talking back in the day when Nyck de Vries was replaced, and then with Daniel Ricciardo, who was then replaced with Liam Lawson, they were like, if anything happens to Liam Lawson, their only choice is to bring back Nyck de Vries.
Right. Yeah. Interesting.
Let's talk quali. Let's talk quali for the Grand Prix, shall we?
Yes, let's do that. So I think the main thing for me, firstly, again, fairly continuous from what we saw in the sprint. Max taking pole, but the thing that stood out for me was that he didn't even need to set a second time.
Yeah.
We essentially saw, well, firstly, Hadjar going out in Q1, delaying things a little bit there, but things started heating up, of course, in Q3 when everyone's going for pole. And Max set a very blistering time as the first run. And then as they were going out for the second run, Max seemed very relaxed, very sort of lackadaisical, went out very late. And then over the radio, you heard Lambiassi saying, you've got to hurry up here, Max. We're actually quite close to the cutoff. And he clearly pushes it a little bit, mm-hmm. gets sort of held up by a few people, has to let them pass, ends up missing the actual timing line. So he actually couldn't set a second time. Meanwhile, Lando's flying around, Leclerc's flying around, Piastri, but none of them can beat Max. And he holds his position in pole. Norris second, Leclerc third. The thing that I find is the most interesting, and I know we've spoken about this on previous episodes, is the deficit to Piastri.
Yeah.
Piastri qualified sixth with Lando second. And I mean, it's sort of continued into the race, as I'm sure we'll discuss, but for me, we saw Baku. He had arguably the worst race weekend of his life.
Yeah.
Singapore was clearly mentally rattled with the situation that happened and seemed very dejected over the radio.
Yeah.
And this weekend, it's just a pure lack of pace to mm-hmm. Lando. And it's this momentum that is going further and further away from Piastri and much more in Norris's favor. And I think this quali was an example of that. And it shows that we do have a genuine fight for the championship rather than a points gap that is not exactly representative of a fight.
I have a random question, and you might not know it off the bat, but when you're watching quali, let's say you're watching Q3, let's say a driver puts up a pretty good lap time. What do you think is the most they could improve in their following push lap? How many tenths can you reasonably gain?
In the growth from their first lap to their second lap in Q3? It depends on the track. Okay. So some tracks, I mean, I know last season or the season before, there was a weird phenomenon where almost every weekend, the second runs in Q3 weren't quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of track evolution almost stopped. It was like the first run of Q3 would happen and then they would, essentially be setting yellow sectors for the second runs. And then other ones, I guess it's track evolution in terms of how it interacts, possibly support series has an impact on that, mm-hmm. If the track's rubbered down or not. So I don't think there's a set amount of time between those first runs and second runs of what's realistic. But I don't know if that answers your question.
No, it does.
Probably not, but...
No, it does. I was being delusional when I was watching quali in Q3 because I was like, all right, Max set a 1.325, and the track record for quali is a 1.3209 set by Valtteri Bottas in 2019. I was like, can he find 0.4 in this lap? Probably not, but maybe he's going to break the record.
Yeah, well, I think if you've got a driver on crazy form, I'm thinking like Lewis in Singapore back in 2018, where he was just, on another level.
Yeah.
You can sometimes get those freak laps where it's just put together so well, but naturally, the perfect lap doesn't exist, as people say.
Right.
You can only do so much. But either way, brilliant pole by Max, 0.3 ahead of Lando.
Yeah,
we both called it, so well done to us.
And I think
the race was much the same.
And going into the race, I thought that was so interesting because you could say that pole position at COTA is kind of a poison chalice going into turn one. The a fact they kept rattling off all weekend was in the last 7 races at COTA, only one out of those 7 races, the pole sitter was leading after lap one. So it's almost that you were at a disadvantage being on the outside and pole position, starting grid position. And also, I know the first 10 races at COTA were won from the front row, but 2024, Charles Leclerc won from P4, 2023, Max won from P6. So it was almost as if like, you didn't have a great advantage being from pole, but the last person who won from pole was in 2021, who was Max Verstappen.
He is inevitable. He is. And I think we had a mix of factors with this one.
Yeah.
Obviously Max being Max, super reliable, off the line. I think he's probably the most reliable driver of any in terms of having a good start. The opposite to that, you could argue, is Lando. He's got a history of tough starts. He's gotten better recently. I think it was maybe last season where he was really struggling with those starts.
Yeah.
And then you had Leclerc behind him on the softs. So there was a sort of combination of factors that meant Max got a good start, Lando got a bad start, Leclerc got a good start. And so Leclerc jumped Lando pretty much into turn two. And Max from that point just sailed off. I think... brilliant strategy from Ferrari in that sense.
Yeah, great gamble for Leclerc to start on softs. Sure. So I was like a little hesitant about that. I'm like, are you sure? Like, is he really going to make those last? But I think, and we can talk about this later about the tires, it's like Pirelli is in one of those weird damned if you do, damned if you don't situations. They skipped the C2. They did C1, C3, C4. We thought there would be like this massive drop off after a certain amount of laps with the softs or the mediums, but they're actually so reliable that these drivers are able to manage them for much longer than the estimated window.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think Ferrari were I want to say the only, definitely the only team in the top 10, possibly top 15 to go for that strategy.
Yeah.
And yeah, they got the jump on Lando and then essentially caused Lando a massive headache all race. Basically the only reason we had much racing on track, there were some good wheel to wheel. Yeah. A bit of action between Lando and Norris.
Yeah.
Because of that, but it meant Max just took off. And I think if Lando had a better start, Leclerc started on the mediums, Lando on the softs, we could be seeing a Lando win, possibly. I think Max probably was on a different level generally, but I think, the time difference wasn't so much based, given the fact that Lando was held up for so long by Leclerc. I think we could have seen a fight for the win, but yeah, fantastic strategy. And then once the pit stops came, Leclerc managed to get back in front, but this time it was Leclerc on the mediums, Lando on the softs. Lando then pushed quite a few times in that sort of second stint to get past Leclerc. Had some good dive bombs down the inside. Eventually, I think it must have been, around lap 50 or 60 where we saw him start to build that gap, maybe 3 seconds. And we thought, oh, well, that's done. And, Norris P3. And then it was clearly just saving tyres and he gave it a good go at the end and managed to get the job done and finish P2 with Leclerc P3. So for Ferrari, I guess not necessarily a gain, but a very impressive strategy and a brilliant effort.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Also, I'm towards that the end of that race, I believe it was Lando Norris that said my tires are gone on radio, and I feel like that was a bluff.
It made in my eyes, because they were fairly new at that point.
Yeah,
it definitely would have made sense. So, just more of that, please. Yeah. More of that.
It was great. We had Carlos Sainz and Andrea Cominiatinelli go on make a collision on lap 7 at turn 15. Do you think it was Carlos Sainz's fault? Do you think he deserved that penalty? That he's now has a 5-grid penalty in Mexico City.
Yeah, I think it was, to be honest. I think it's tough to argue against. I think the way he did argue Kimi was moving on to braking, I want to say, but I think, fundamentally, the way he dived in, clearly out of control, not able to hook up the corner. In my eyes, it's a fairly slam dunk Sainz penalty, and so he's got a 5-place grid penalty for Mexico, which in my eyes I thought was actually pretty harsh. But I guess for Sainz, he ended up DNFing that race anyway, so I think for me, once you DNF to then get a 5-place grid penalty is pretty brutal. But that's the stewards for you, I guess. Can't argue too much, but I think, quite underwhelming Sunday compared to what he did in the sprint race, of course, finishing P3.
For sure. We now have Lewis Hamilton as the driver with the most races with Ferrari without scoring a podium, but he is the first driver ever to score 5,000 points.
Yeah, a bit of a...
is that true? Most races ever without scoring a podium? Is that true?
As of that race.
Wow.
Yeah. I want to say 19 races from the start of this season. I want to say he overtook, or would you say undertook, in terms of this record. Didier Pironi, I think it was, back in the 80s, 90s. So definitely not the record he was looking for.
Pironi was 80s, early 80s. He and Gilles Villeneuve were teammates at Ferrari. There's a great documentary, if you haven't seen it, about their rivalry we're seeing. I believe it's just called Villeneuve-Pironi or something.
I think it is. Yeah. I think it is. Very imaginative name, but brilliant documentary.
But it's interesting because Lewis Hamilton is the first driver ever to score 5,000 points, but is that adjusted for inflation?
No. No, it's not. So, you know, if we put back in the day of Fangio winning in the 50s, where he got 8 points for a win,
right?
You know, it's a stretch of a record, but it's another one that Hamilton can tick off the list because he's got, I mean, a ridiculous amount of records as it is.
So many.
Just another one he can add. Not exactly the most meaningful. I think it just shows he's been around a long time in the modern era of point scoring. So, mm-hmm. Not too much to look into, but a silver lining in what is another fairly disappointing record for Hamilton.
For sure. Let's talk about how this race result affects the championship fight. I believe Lando Norris finishing in second with 18 points, Piastri in fifth with 10 gives him an 8-point swing after the race, correct?
Yep. So we've now got essentially a 14-point gap in the championship, which I think, looking, I want to say maybe 3 or 4 races ago, mm-hmm. Was not expected.
Yeah.
I think, you know, back when Piastri had some serious momentum, Lando was, you know, getting a bit frustrated at himself, openly criticizing himself. People weren't seeing this coming. And so I am incredibly excited. The championship fight is absolutely on. 14 points is nothing. You know, that is a third place finish and a DNF. It's, yeah, you know, a couple races of just finishing two places apart. So I think this is teeing up the championship beautifully for Abu Dhabi, or possibly even before that.
I hope so for Abu Dhabi. I hope it comes down to the last race.
Oh, for sure. But what's not just the McLarens now. I think we've been almost joking, which is logical based on how it's been going so far, that about Max being in the fight, title fight. But Max is only 40 points off Piastri now. Mm-hmm. He took 23 points out of Oscar's championship lead just this weekend.
Yeah.
And that is, 2 points less than a race win. So I think, you know, if he does that the next two races, he's leading the championship. So Max is definitely back in it. And I think momentum is the main thing for me. He is on fire.
100%. In absolutely incredible form. And it's interesting because I joked, what if George Russell got into this mix and we had a revisit to the end of the 2010 season, but you're like, actually it's more like 2007. And I think you are absolutely right. What we are seeing right now potentially could be exactly like the 2007 Formula One season when Kimi Raikkonen won. A lot of people sometimes make comparisons to Kimi Raikkonen, Max Verstappen, and their personality. The fact that they both have like ice in their veins and seem to be unfazed by anything. We could potentially have a repeat of 2007 when Kimi Raikkonen overtook two teammates from which team?
McLaren. There we go.
We had two teammates in 2007. We had two teammates at McLaren in Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso who were fighting each other. McLaren did not have a number one driver. They ended up finishing equal on points, I believe, Alonso and Hamilton. And Kimi Raikkonen won the championship by a single point.
Indeed. And so, if we get anything close to that, I think this will go down as one of the best seasons, well, certainly in the turbo hybrid era, I'd argue possibly the best, maybe after 21. But it's so exciting. And I think the thing for me with Max at the moment is you can just tell he just has nothing to lose. You know,
yes.
He's like, I've got 40 points to go. If I don't do it, fine. You know, like that's a serious point swing to try and overcome. So there's no pressure on him at all to do it. And that's when Max is absolutely lethal race week in, week out. And we saw it this week. You know, he had a perfect score, full points, you know, pole, sprint, quali pole, race, on fire. And I am very intrigued. We've got, for the first time in, what would it be, three-way fight for the title, genuine three-way fight would have been 2012.
Okay.
Must have been. 13 odd years since we've had this, so I am incredibly excited. And I think as well there's a lot of points to be had yet. Six races left, I think I'm right in saying 5 or 6, but two of those are sprint race weekends. So we've got sprint races in Brazil and Qatar. Obviously this was a sprint race weekend where Max gained 23 points, so there's lots of points on the table still. Lots of moments to come. I'm certain we're going to get a very exciting finish to this season.
Let's rank who is feeling the most pressure right now. I'm going to say Lando Norris is feeling the most pressure, followed by Piastri, followed big gap down to Verstappen in three.
See, I'd go Piastri is feeling the most. I think just because of the run he's had.
Yeah.
I think the mentality he's had at the start of the year, the run he was off to, I mean, he was winning almost every race in the first few races of the season. I would have said Lando definitely feeling the pressure for most of this season. But since Baku, I think Baku was the sort of first incident where it was maybe a freak accident and it was a weird funk for Piastri.
Yeah.
But then Singapore happened. And now this weekend, there's three different weekends in a row of different sort of shortfalls. One is just colliding and hitting the barrier by himself. One is being really moody on the radio and just dejected and, oh, I can't be bothered. And then the next is just simply not being quick enough. I think all those three combined will make Piastri go, what am I doing wrong?
You know, yeah.
how is Norris suddenly quicker than me? What do I do? And I think whereas Lando is almost like, I feel great now. I'm quicker than him. I know I can beat him. It's 14 points. Bring it on. That's how I see it, but I know Lando can be quite susceptible to being a bit nervous.
I think they're all great drivers. I think Lando Norris is a great driver, but I think this by far is going to be his best chance to win a driver's championship in his entire career.
Agreed.
I think Piastri, again, ceiling is so high. I think he's going to have many other seasons where he's going to be seriously contending for the driver's championship. So that's why I think Norris is maybe feeling the most pressure. And then, like you said, Verstappen's been here four times before already. If he wins a fifth, it's just gravy at this point. It's just a victory lap, pun intended. So I think I agree with you that Max is feeling no pressure whatsoever.
Oh, definitely not. I mean, given the fact that, you know, to kick off this amazing run of form, he was racing Nürburgring, you know, in his free time. You know, he's such a nonchalant champion when it comes to racing, and it's so impressive. And I think, yeah, I wouldn't have been caught wanting Max to win another title, trust me. But at the start of this year, I was like, please, let's get a new winner. But if he does it with this points gap, it would be the biggest point swing, I want to say, in F1 history, again counting for inflation. It's always an asterisk, isn't it?
It's gotta be.
But yeah, it would be amazing. I would love to see a new winner.
Yeah.
But equally, I think if he wins that title this year, I mean, I would argue possibly GOAT status if he does that. I think
for sure.
Probably fair.
Let's do our Mexico Grand Prix preview, shall we?
Yes, let's do it.
Let's look who up the title sponsor of the Mexican Grand Prix is, just so we're proper.
You love a full name. You love it.
I love it.
Can I guess?
Yes, you can guess.
I'm going to go for...
Oh, interesting.
For,
there is not...
Or is it not?
There's not a title sponsor.
Ah,
it's the Formula.
Easy enough.
It's the Formula One Gran Premio de la Ciudad de Mexico 2025.
Ah.
So it's the Mexico City
Grand
Prix.
They still make it sound very long when it could be shorter.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Spanish. Like Spanish and Italian. Like, no, like sure. You translate it, like, it's a big longer. Yeah, so let's talk about the Formula One Gran Premio de la Ciudad de Mexico in el año 2025. As we all know,
this is where the Spanish stops. I cannot continue that.
As we all know, the Mexico City Grand Prix happened at the Autódromo Hermanos Rodríguez. Luke and I, you and I both went there last year for Formula E Season 10, Race 1. It was the first race of the Formula E season last year. That track, I know a lot of people complain, F1 fans specifically, that this does not produce a great race because there are not a lot of opportunities for overtake. The turn in the stadium is incredibly slow. But as a fan experience, being at that track is unbelievable. The energy is incredible.
Oh, it's brilliant. The Mexican audience just love motorsport. I think it's almost up there with the Italians in Monza, with, you know, the Dutch fans in Zandvoort, Silverstone, British fans. Like, they are so passionate, especially in the sort of Foro Sol stadium section.
Yeah.
They go crazy.
Yeah.
And I, one of my favorite memories of F1 ever was Lewis winning in 2017 in Mexico, running down through the stadium with the great British flag. That's not me being very patriotic, but it was just a brilliant, brilliant image.
Yeah.
All the Mexican fans basically raiding the track after. Once the podium celebrations were starting, the whole stadium was full of fans. It was, an amazing championship winning moment, which I feel only Mexico can really conjure up versus other circuits.
For sure.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.
Some race facts. The first Mexican Grand Prix was in 1962 and returned after 20 years in 2015 with the new track layout, which is at the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. 2024 runner was Max Verstappen, continuing Red Bull's strong run despite close challenges from Ferrari and McLaren. Previous belters. Let's talk about some previous races that were really good there.
Yes. I was saying in 2017, I think, was my favorite, probably because it was the first one I'd seen. And you had Lewis Hamilton essentially chasing down his championship win. He started fairly high up in the grid, but there was a collision in the first corner and he dropped down to, you know, almost the bottom of the grid for the first lap or two. And it was just about him clawing back those places to finish at a high enough grid spot to win the title. And I notoriously remember Alonso and him fighting, with Alonso in the really, I know we talk about it now with McLaren winning, but in 2018 or 2017, the McLaren was not a strong car.
Yeah.
And so you had Alonso fighting brilliantly and defending against Hamilton, almost as a flashback to 2007 again. And so, yeah, eventually Hamilton did get past and managed to finish, I think, P7 in that race to clinch his what would have been fourth title, I want to say, at that point, equaling Vettel, who was his championship rival that year. So
yeah,
that was definitely my favorite. But we've had some other ones since as well.
Yeah, I want some quick facts about the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez. A little history. While the first Mexican Grand Prix was in 1962, the 1963 Mexican Grand Prix was the first official Formula One race in Mexico. It ran from 62 to 70, then again from 86 to 92, until finally returning again in 2015. Since F1 came back to Mexico in 2015, Lewis Hamilton has won there twice, in 2016 and 2019. And Max Verstappen has been absolutely dominant here. He's won here six times, including the last 4 years. Originally called the Magdalena Mixuca Circuit, it was renamed the Autodromo Hermanos Rodriguez after two brothers and legendary Mexican drivers, Ricardo Rodriguez and Pedro Rodriguez. Both brothers died tragically on the track over 10 years apart. This track sits at the highest altitude of any other track on the F1 calendar at 2,285 meters, or approximately 7,500 feet above sea level. So, high altitude, thin air, less drag. Cars will be running with a lot of downforce, but also with the high altitude, it's physically tougher on the drivers because it's harder to breathe. It's an incredibly challenging physical adjustment for these drivers to have.
Yeah, it's a very weird race weekend. Definitely one of a kind on the calendar. As you said, air is super thin. And so in terms of how the aero feels for the drivers, it's like Monza, where you're essentially got really small wings flying through the air, low downforce. But because the air is so thin, they run essentially a Monaco-style downforce package with very, very high-angled rear wings, front wings. So it's a very weird feeling for the drivers. And then, as you said, you add in that physical element of having to essentially breathe properly throughout a whole race with that sort of altitude. I mean, we've did a track walk at that altitude, and you know, I was blowing by the end of it as well. So I can't imagine how these guys are doing it.
Yeah. I'm super excited for it. I forget what the overtake number was for last year, but I know in 2023 there were 43 overtakes at the Mexico City Grand Prix. So it is possible you can pass on this track. It just depends. And I do remember, I believe in 2023, Lando Norris had a crazy comeback drive. I think he started like P17 on the grid and ended up finishing P5. So it is possible to climb your way up through the grid in the right conditions. In if you're like lucky with timing and whatnot.
Yeah, well, I think with the back straight, it's one of the longest on the calendar. Not quite as long as Baku, but very, very long. So it's my favorite run down into turn one.
Yeah.
Usually you get possibly up to four cars wheel to wheel going into the first corner. Usually there is always some sort of fanfare of crashing or someone cutting across the grass and drivers complaining on the radio. And so, yeah, if we're given a Max Lando Oscar in that front three, I think it's going to be a recipe for disaster, but fireworks when it comes to the title. So I'm very excited for this race, not just because of the championship standings and what that context is, but the wider circuit itself. Not only that, I mean, we talk about overtaking. There are three DRS zones, so there are quite a few. More than the sort of standard two. There's the first DRS zone of the circuit, which I guess would be the start-finish straight, of course, going down for quite a long way. They did shorten that quite recently because it was so long and almost too much, causing quite a lot of overtakes that essentially were just too easy. So they've shortened it a bit, tried to improve the racing into that first corner.
Yeah.
And then from turn three to turn four, there's a second DRS straight, quite a small straight, but enough to possibly make a move. And then just after the sort of S's section, there's another DRS zone from turn 11 down to turn 12, where they then make the right-hander into the stadium section. So there are a few bits to overtake. Last year, I think Max probably thought there were definitely more places than there were in reality to overtake. Yeah. If you remember, this one was where we really saw Max start to mentally crumble, I guess you'd argue, sort of in a similar position to what Lando or Piastri's in. You know, you had a quick Lando Norris trying to close that championship gap, and it was maybe getting to Verstappen a bit. This year, it's the other way around, and I don't think I've seen Max so composed and so calm. So, so much a year can change, can't it?
Yep, absolutely. As you said, there are three DRS zones, 71 laps, 17 turns, a track length of 4.304 kilometers. We have the race lap record, Valtteri Bottas in 2021 with a 117.774. All-time lap record, also Valtteri with a 1:14.758 in qualifying in 2021. Let's do some predictions, shall we?
Let's do it.
I'm putting Isaac Hadjar in P5 because I think the Racing Bulls, because the track is thin, I think there are some cars that have competitive advantages at other tracks that they will not have here. I'm going to say Isaac Hadjar is going to be able to get some great performance out of that car. I'm putting Isaac Hadjar in P5. I'm going to have George Russell P4, Lando Norris P3, Oscar Piastri P2, Max Verstappen, who has been so dominant at this track. There's no reason why I don't think he's not going to win here.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I've got Max P1. I'll go reverse to you in terms of order. So I've got Max P1 purely, I think, looking at his form in Monza with that, well, low downforce package, but Monza-style package. I've got a feeling those same conditions here will lend into that that sort of setup. So I think you've got that in his favor, and then Max just generally dominating anyway. So I think this will actually be quite an easy win for him.
Yeah.
I've got Lando in P2. Just based on the past two races, he's been, I think, the better McLaren. I will get on to the other protagonist in the championship because he's not in my top five. I've got Russell P3, And then Leclerc and Hamilton to finish off the top five. I think the Ferrari showed really good pace in COTA, in race pace. Not sure how they've turned that around. I don't know whether it's just good fortune or good setup, but I think, yeah, they should be in and about again. But I think, and this is almost a conspiracy theory, but the other thing about very thin air is the engines have to work considerably harder to cool.
Yeah.
So usually they widen the air intakes on the car to basically make sure the air, as much air as possible, gets in.
Yeah.
Thinner air, you need to make sure it's more, as efficient as possible. So engine failures are more common. They have to, essentially, the engine has to work much, much harder. The only recent engine failure that I've seen from the top teams was Lando Norris in, I think, the Dutch Grand Prix, I would
right.
say, which
yeah.
was the moment where we thought this whole championship had twisted and it was done. It could happen to Lando again, but I'm using logic that it was a McLaren, and I'm just saying Oscar's now going to get this, and it's going to make the championship completely open heading into the final, four, five races.
Also, George Russell is still technically in contention for the championship. Charles Leclerc has been eliminated from contention for the driver's champion, but George Russell, even though he's a little further back, still in the mix. He could run the table. All the other cars, Lando, Oscar, and Max could DNF the rest of the races.
They could.
And
they could.
He could yabba dabba do it.
He could yabba dabba do it. Absolutely.
Anything else you want to talk about before we leave?
I think we're all good. I'm just very excited.
I am
too. It's good to have championship fights back, properly back, and a proper anticipation heading into a race weekend and not predictability. So I'm very excited.
I agree with you. I think we were getting to a part in the season where people were a little burned out, and the season was starting to get a little boring. And I think that's because while there were two drivers in contention for the driver's championship, they were on the same team. McLaren had the constructors locked up, and it just didn't feel like, with the exception for Oscar and Lando individually, for fans, it didn't feel like there were a ton of stakes. But now that Max is in striking distance, I think it's reinvigorated the excitement and enthusiasm that fans have for this season.
Yeah, no, agreed. It's really invigorated the season again. And it's what we wanted. I think from a commercial side, viewership side, it was dipping off. We still had a bit of interest with the McLaren fight, but as you say, they're teammates. They were sort of being best buddies, trying not to hit each other.
Yeah.
And now we've got, you know, gloves are off with this. Mm-hmm. When you've got a Max chasing behind, you cannot be complacent and friendly to your teammate. So I think both of them know that, and they know they can't. Yeah. They're not going to let the other one pass if there's a slow pit stop. You can definitely be certain that won't happen.
100%. Y'all, thank you so much for listening to the WTF1 podcast. I'm James Coker, along with Luke Francis. If you like what you heard, make sure to leave a comment wherever you listen to podcasts, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Make sure to like and subscribe. Or if there's something you disagreed with, if I said something really stupid that you hated, you can also disagree with that as well. We hope you have a wonderful week, and we hope you enjoy the Formula One Gran Premio de la Ciudad de México en el año 2025. Adiós.
Sí, claro. Adiós.
Hasta luego.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at COTA.com/service changes. That's COTA.com/service changes.